This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 15th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring entrepreneurs in the January 21st edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can also register for the daily business e-news.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Fort Smith officials discuss the possibility of an urban deer hunt to help control deer populations. And we have a conversation with comedian Ralphie May before he comes to Arkansas for a series of performances later this week.
Plus, the White River isn't as well known as other rivers that flow in and around the state, like the Arkansas and the Mississippi, but a new exhibit at the Art Center of the Ozarks gives the White its due.
That and more, but first, Governor Mike Beebe gave his State of the State address this morning in front of a joint session of the state legislature. After opening remarks and talk of how this session is a historic one, Beebe issued a call for abolishing most of the state's grocery tax.
When I was sworn in as governor in 2007, I promised to attack the onerous state sales tax on groceries. With the help of three previous legislatures, the grocery tax has incrementally fallen from 6% to 1.5%. This being my last regular session, there is an urge to finish the job now.
However, Governor Beebe says the elimination of the tax will take time.
With the challenges we face, I don't see room to cut this tax at this time without endangering needed services, but I still want to plan for it. There are monies that will become available to further cut the grocery tax. We're just not sure when. Chief among these are the state's ongoing payments to the Pulaski County school districts after the desegregation ruling of the 1980s. We know these payments will end. The only question is timing. I propose that we pass legislation to make grocery tax relief the first call on this money when it becomes available.
Governor Beebe says the funds currently being allocated to desegregation payments may not become available for a year or more, but that when those funds become available, they should be in place to make final cuts to the grocery tax. We'll have more from Governor Beebe's address on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Arkansas's 89th General Assembly can now begin to work on many of the tough issues facing the state. The Senate and House both convened yesterday. Both the Speaker of the House and the Senate pro tem are Republicans. Their new leadership roles are among the many signs of the recent power shift in the state from a majority of Democratic legislative leadership to one that is now mostly Republican. However, House Speaker David Carter urged his chamber to work with each other as they debate the issues.
We have serious issues ahead that will require vigorous debate, but that's okay. That's what we're charged to do. Never forget, every time you push that button, you're pushing that button for 30,000 Arkansans.
New Senate leader Michael Lamoureux urged bipartisanship in his chamber. He told members that both sides have valid points on legislation, specifically on whether the state will expand its Medicaid program and how to shore up its current funding shortfall.
On the agenda for the Fayetteville City Council tonight is the acceptance of a $25,000 grant that City Waste Reduction Coordinator Brian Pugh says will help city residents recycle e-waste such as computers, televisions, and other electronics.
It's a state grant through the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, and they are allowing us to print out vouchers or coupons that we can give out to residents of Fayetteville. And those coupons will be worth $5, and you can redeem those at the Washington County site. And in lieu of paying $5, you can just recycle your electronics for free.
The e-waste is collected at the Washington County Office of Environmental Affairs on Brink Drive in South Fayetteville. The old electronics are then taken to ESCO Processing and Recycling in Rogers for processing and rendering. Pugh says the coupon program could encourage recycling of items that residents would otherwise find difficult to dispose of.
The landfill has actually banned the e-waste, like the computers and TVs, from the landfill. And so there is a lot of issues with groundwater contamination for electronics such as those. So this program will help us to educate the residents of Fayetteville that there are options to recycling.
Pugh says e-waste contains several pollutants that could taint groundwater if disposed of in the landfill, including heavy metals such as cadmium, mercury, and lead, in addition to flame retardants.
Walmart Stores Incorporated made a pair of announcements this morning. The Bentonville-based retail giant announced that beginning on Memorial Day, it will offer a job to any honorably discharged veteran in his or her first 12 months off of active duty. According to the company, it expects to hire more than 100,000 veterans in the next 5 years. The company also announced it will buy an additional $50 billion in domestically sourced goods, including such categories as storage products, games, sporting goods, and paper products.
The band Perry will soon be returning to Northwest Arkansas, this time as the headlining act for the Northwest Arkansas Children's Shelter's Starlight Gala. The shelter and presenting sponsor, General Mills, announced yesterday the family-based band, comprised of siblings Kimberly, Reed, and Neil Perry, will perform at the gala, scheduled for Saturday, April 27th, at the John Q. Hammonds Convention Center in Rogers. This will be the second consecutive year for the Starlight Gala. Last year, the charity event raised more than $435,000 for the children's shelter. The band has only issued one full-length album since founding in 2009, but it has received a handful of awards from the Academy of Country Music and Country Music Television, in addition to several other award nominations. Their gold-certified singles following their debut album include 2010's If I Die Young, You Lie, and All Your Life.
Arkansans eligible for one-time payments from the National Mortgage Settlement are nearing the deadline to file claims to receive those payments. According to a release yesterday from Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel's office, Arkansans who lost their homes to foreclosure between January 1, 2008 and December 31, 2011, and whose loans were serviced by one of five lenders involved in the settlement, are eligible for the cash payments. $1.5 billion was set aside from the total $25 billion settlement with Ally, GMAC, Bank of America, Citibank, JP Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo. The settlement came after a 16-month investigation into the mortgage servicing practices such as robo-signing or the approval of foreclosure documents without reviewing them. The Attorney General's office says if you believe you're eligible for a cash payment but did not receive a claim form in the mail, you should contact the settlement administrator at nationalmortgagesettlement.com. And for more information, you can visit the Attorney General's website, gotyourbackarkansas.org.
The College of Engineering at the University of Arkansas is receiving good ink from the national press. In its best online programs rankings, U.S. News & World Reports has ranked the college's Master of Science in Engineering the 25th out of 66 online graduate engineering programs. According to a release issued this morning by the university, the fully accredited program is taught by graduate faculty from the College of Engineering and is designed for students who want to further their education in a variety of engineering topics. The program is open to students with a bachelor's degree in any engineering field and incorporates classes from traditional Master of Science degrees in all of the major engineering fields.
Mostly clear tonight, continued cold, lows around 12 in Northwest Arkansas. A few clouds tonight for the Arkansas River Valley with a low around 20. Tomorrow, sunshine, it'll be in the mid-40s in the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow, lower 40s for Northwest Arkansas. And for Wednesday night, mostly clear, lows from 23 to 27 throughout the KUAF listening area. This is Ozarks at Large. On a regular basis, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business sits down with Governor Mike Beebe to ask the governor questions submitted by listeners. This morning, the governor, of course, addressed a joint session of the Arkansas legislature, his biennial State of the State address. But last week, Roby sat down with the governor to discuss questions about the state legislative session, which began yesterday.
We've got a session starting this next week. Mm-hmm. You've talked quite a bit about Medicaid and its impact on the session and how that's going to affect all the budget issues. Tell us something that we're that we need to be focused on beyond the Medicaid issue in this session.
Well, you know, overall balancing a budget, trying to maintain where we are with regard to continued progress in education and being able to be competitive with our sister states and everybody else around the world for economic development opportunities, and particularly jobs, maintaining existing jobs, expanding existing companies' opportunities here, as well as attracting new ones. Those always, I think, will be a cornerstone of what we need to be focused on, because then you can address these other issues with a greater degree of certainty, or certainly with more ease than you would otherwise if people don't have jobs and you don't have a tax base and you don't have education. The two go together. You can't create job opportunities without good education, and all of the best education in the world doesn't do you any good if you don't have a job. So you have to address both of those, and hopefully the legislature will continue to prioritize those two areas in a way that allows us to continue to be competitive.
I asked you the question at the Associated Press Forum yesterday. You dodged it very artfully. Give you about some things that you're going to bring in your legislative package for next week when you speak to the General Assembly. But let's talk specifically about economic development. Mm-hmm. Are you going to present some things that may expand opportunities for jobs, expand opportunities? I know you'll keep it in the policy realm of where you have philosophically been, but what's going to specifically come next? There's research, university research opportunities. There's potential for your quick action closing fund, other economic development tools where we focus more on what's happening in terms of intellectual property. What are you going to do creatively on this?
All of those things you just mentioned have been on the table and will continue to be on the table and will be adjusted and or expanded as our budget allows us to do it and as changing circumstances dictate, whether it's expansion of protection for intellectual property or utilization of intellectual property for actual taking research and applying it to new jobs and new job startups. All of those things will continue to generically be there. In terms of something even more specific, there is something even more specific, but we'll not talk about it until probably the state of the state address.
Can you give me a hint?
No.
A hint?
No. I mean, that'd be unfair. We got all these other folks that in the news media that would like to have...
Well, they're all paying attention, and they'll report on this, too.
Sure they are. So, no, we do have potentially, unless something changes between now and next week, there is probably going to be a potential specific announcement on economic development that will be different than what you've seen in the past.
We've got time for one more. You addressed this yesterday, but it didn't make the cut as much as some of the Medicaid discussion did. There's going to be a lot of proposals on education reform in this legislative session, mm-hmm. particularly on vouchers, particularly on expanding charter schools and that whole process. What gives you pause for concern? What do you support in terms of some of those talked about changes?
Well, with regard to charter schools, I have been a proponent. And I think our State Board of Education, who actually does this and who I appoint, so I've got responsibility for them, have been proponents of open enrollment public charter schools where they are located in a fashion that they don't inhibit the corresponding regular public school in that next to them in that same district that prevents them from being able to comply with the Supreme Court orders and the constitutional requirements of Lakeview. Now, that's a complex answer. The bottom line is if you had a school district of 500 kids in it and they're getting X amount of money per child to meet standards, and they've got to meet all these curriculum requirements and these certifications of their teachers, and they're getting this money based on 500, and you open an open enrollment charter school next to it with 200 kids, then how are they going to be able to meet the requirements of Lakeview? And that may not be a good, because that'd be below 350, say 600 and 200. Then how are they going to be able to meet that? You wouldn't want to do that. You wouldn't want to approve an open enrollment public charter school in that scenario, because you're adversely affecting the public school to their detriment to be able to comply with Supreme Court order. Now, on the other hand, where there's, and I'm a huge Kipp school, for example, proponent. On the other hand, where there's a large enough base for the public school that the existence of a charter school next to it doesn't adversely affect their ability to be able to deliver their services. In fact, creates a competition that may make both better. That's something that I support and that the state board is supporting. So they've approved a lot of them, but they've also jerked a lot of them where open enrollment charter school did not do what they were supposed to do. They've jerked those charters. And that's what they ought to do. That's their job.
So you don't think the law is too broken?
No, and we've expanded. The cap's been raised, and we've not reached the cap, to my knowledge, since it's been raised.
What about on vouchers?
Oh, I don't favor tax money, public tax dollars for education going to private education. And I think most folks in private schools wouldn't want that either, because they wouldn't want what might go with that in terms of oversight.
Will you be fighting that legislation?
And regulation and red tape.
Will you be
I would be opposed to that. Of course I would. My position's always been the same on that. Public school money and vouchers for private schools are something I've never been for, ever.
Before today's State of the State address delivered to a joint session of the Arkansas Legislature, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business sat down with Governor Mike Beebe last week to ask questions submitted by listeners about the 2013 state legislative session. To hear the interview in its entirety, visit talkbusiness.net. There you will also find a new feature, a daily webcast and podcast. Around 4:30 every afternoon, you can log on to talkbusiness.net and download or watch the site's coverage of the Capitol as well as the day's business headlines.
And we'll have more about the State of the State address on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. Support for talkbusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks. You have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, they serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity, coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at aecc.com.
And Mitchell Williams Law, providing diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Mitchell Williams Law Firm employs nearly 80 attorneys at offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at mitchellwilliamslaw.com.
Last week, Fort Smith officials were introduced to the idea of holding an urban deer hunt to help control deer populations in the Chaffee Crossing area. There was some concern about the safety of conducting such hunts in the city, but Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis discovers that safety is not an afterthought in planning the urban hunts.
If city directors approve an urban deer hunt tonight for areas in and around Chaffee Crossing, Fort Smith won't be the first Arkansas city to approve such a hunt, but it will become the largest city in the state to take such measures. Kevin Lindsay is the chief of police for the city of Fort Smith. He says that officials from the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission and the Fort Chaffee Redevelopment Authority contacted him, and thus the proposed urban deer hunt was born.
There has been a noticeable increase in the population of the deer herd out in that area of town, reflective of a lot of the construction and development that has been going on all over the city, but especially in that area due to its contrasting rural feeling, wooded areas, et cetera, versus the development that is going on with the businesses and residential development.
Corey Gray is the deer program coordinator for the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. He describes the urban archery deer hunts as a partnership among local and state organizations.
We accept the applicants. We screen them to make sure there's no violations there, enough to lose their license or hunting privileges. The Arkansas Bowhunter Association has done an excellent job. They coordinate the proficiency test. They also work with the international bow hunting courses. And then, you know, we always work with the city officials to make sure all the rules are set up, the boundaries are in place of where these individuals can go and hunt, where they shouldn't go and hunt.
Gray says that although Fort Smith is the second largest city in the state, the Game and Fish Commission would work closely with the city to ensure that the hunts are conducted with the community's safety as a primary focus.
If the city council of that city decides to move forward with this, then, you know, we would have to designate areas to where hunters can go and where they shouldn't go. Safety is always going to be, you know, a top priority with this. And that's why we always go into every hunt saying safety's first, hunting is second. And again, that's why we go through all the requirements. When you look at the requirements of this hunt, it does deter A lot of the hunters do not want to go through the requirements and the procedures to participate.
Chief Lindsay says that while residents should always be concerned about safety, the lengthy list of rules and regulations associated with urban archery hunts helps ensure safety in the community.
The thing that attracted me to this particular program and process were the protocols that were adopted by the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. And that is, you know, specific things that require a certain level of proficiency among the bow hunter. The bow hunter is going to be expected to utilize specific equipment. That equipment is going to have to be approved. They're going to have to pay fees in order to ultimately get a permit that will allow them to participate in the urban deer hunt. But in order to get that permit, like I said, proficiency, testing, a fee, a class they have to go through, an orientation class.
In addition, crossbows will only be allowed and approved by the police department in certain cases, and hunters will be required to hunt from a deer stand that is at least 10 feet above the ground, a move that enhances safety as it forces hunters to shoot toward the ground. But aside from safely thinning the oversized deer population, which prevents the spread of disease and decreases the interactions drivers have with deer, Gray says that the urban deer hunts have another benefit.
We ask the hunters that the first deer you harvest at least be donated to Hunters Feeding the Hungry. And then after that, if you want to donate additional animals, you can. That's up to the hunter, but we do require the first one. Hunters Feeding the Hungry has, and the Game and Fish is partnered together with a refrigerated truck. The Game and Fish, we have a refrigerated pull behind a trailer, and we'll set those up at different places. We work with local processors that are participating in the program to get needed venison on the table of hungry Arkansans.
Arkansas Hunters Feeding the Hungry partners with many meat processors across the state. For more information, visit arkansashunters.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It is Tuesday, January 15th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
Hi, it's Greta.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Things to do today. It's the second installment of the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pens writing workshop at the Fayetteville Public Library. Mm-hmm. It starts at 6 o'clock. The last one was full.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I suggest you call 856-7250 and find out if it's full tonight.
Good idea.
There is an Ozark Poetry Slam. Open mic at 8 o'clock, followed by a poetry slam. It happens the third Tuesday of every month at Rogue on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. And tomorrow, a community that I did not know existed, and I thought I knew all the little ones. There's a lunch lecture at the Shiloh Museum tomorrow on the history of the Glade community.
Glade.
I know it was in Benton County. And that's all I know. So you'll see me at the museum tomorrow finding out more. And that happens at noon. They have cookies and usually cider, and it's
free.
There you go.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspaper.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
Me, it's Rebecca Hayda.
You know how often you'll hear about University of Arkansas athletes turning pro in baseball, football, or basketball?
Sure.
Well, I can report that Janelis Torres-Lopez, who mm-hmm. played volleyball at the University of Arkansas. Yes, she has now signed a professional volleyball contract. She will play with, and I'm going to mispronounce this. Yes, let me just hand this over to you. It is circled.
Where is your, she's going to play with Leonas de Ponce, I guess. Leona de Ponce of the Puerto Rico Superior League.
There you go.
Oh, good for her.
Yes. Now, also, this morning, the American Veterinary Medical Association released their statistics that they do every 5 years about pet ownership in the United States.
Of course you know this.
Well, I didn't know it. They sent out a press release.
But you said, of course.
Yes. Well, every 5 years this is released.
Uh-huh.
What state do you think has the highest percentage of households that own pets? Any guesses?
Highest percentage?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
I wouldn't have either. Vermont. 71% of households in Vermont own a pet.
Huh.
New Mexico is second at 68%. Arkansas, seventh. 62.5% of Arkansas households have a pet. The highest cat ownership in the United States mm-hmm. is Vermont. Nearly half, 49.5% of homes in Vermont have a cat.
Mm.
In D.C., only 11.5% have a cat.
Right.
New Jersey has the lowest dog ownership ratio, just 32%.
Huh.
Top dog?
Top dog.
Arkansas. 48% of Arkansas households have at least one dog. We're number one in dog ownership.
Oh, so we're number one in something.
In dog, or you can say we're the top dog.
So does that count, like, register? I don't know if registered is the right word, but, like, people take in a lot of strays, or maybe they aren't. Some dogs, there are a lot of animals that are kind of, like, feral cats and things. I don't know the equivalent for a dog. It's not counting that, right?
This is the American Veteran Medical Association, so I think it's counting the cats and dogs and birds and reptiles and whatever else you keep that are taken care of by vets.
By vets and stuff.
And
okay.
registered to some degree.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
So, number one in dog ownership, 48% of Arkansas households.
Hooray.
Yes.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
It's 12:08 in Little Rock from KAY. This is Stephen Stills, Crosby, Nash, and Young, and for Rick Morris in Sheraton, Iowa, this is Southern Man from the Mule, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young album, Southern Man.
The legendary North American AM radio station KAAY launched on September 3, 1962. Located in Little Rock and at 1090 on the AM radio dial, KAAY was heard in some 40 U.S. states, half of Canada into Alaska, Central and South America, and the Caribbean. KAAY was formed from KTHS AM out of Hot Springs. On the air since 1924, KTHS was one of the state's oldest radio stations and its first 50,000-watt AM station. KTHS, standing for Come to Hot Springs, broadcast from the Arlington Hotel downtown. The station also had the distinction of launching the duo Lum and Abner, who based their gentle country comedy out of a general store in Pine Ridge in Montgomery County and were real-life natives of Mena in Polk County. KTHS moved its operations to Little Rock in 1953, was acquired by the Lynn Broadcasting Corporation in 1962, and relaunched as KAAY AM 1090 that fall. Due to KAAY's 50,000-watt power and strategic location, the radio station worked with the U.S. government to broadcast American propaganda into Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis, just weeks after the station had went on the air in Little Rock with its new call letters. U.S. President John F. Kennedy later sent the station a letter of commendation. Listeners today might be surprised at the wide variety of music that could be heard on the mighty 1090. As one of the station's slogans went, "We play all kinds of music for all kinds of people," and literally millions tuned in to the friendly giant.
Music Radio with Steve Scott. It's 1:37. We'll be out here at Radio Shack on Rodney Parham across from Kmart till 3:30 this afternoon. I'll tell you what. Let's see. Next blue car that pulls in, I'll give you a copy of Eric Burton's Sun Secrets album. All right? Next blue car. Just come up here. Well, here we are right here. Well, all right. Let's try a red car now. Next red car that pulls in, you too will get a copy of Eric Burton's Sun Secrets. We're at Radio Shack, where you can find the best speakers. And I'm talking about Optimus and Nova. Now, these speakers are sold only by Radio Shack, and they're guaranteed, get this, forever. Like, they're guaranteed forever. That's all you can say about it. You need to stop out and check them out. Optimus and Nova. Ask Bob, Randy, Betty, or Joe behind the counter, and they'll tell you all about it. At Radio Shack on Rodney Parham, right across from Kmart.
Some see similarities between KAAY and the TV sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati, though Hugh Wilson, the show's creator, says he based it on his experiences working for a similar AM Top 40 station in Atlanta, KQXI. Little Rock native Frank Bonner starred as WKRP sales manager Herb Tarlick. KAAY was located at 1425 West 7th Street in a former doctor's office near the state capitol. But the radio station studio was just one of many of Little Rock's cultural landmarks displaced by construction of the I-630 Wilbur D. Mills Freeway right through the middle of the city. KAAY relocated north to 2400 Cottondale Lane near the Arkansas River in late 1976.
So the years spin by, and now the boy is 20.
During the day, state and national news reports, farm reports, and more were also a big part of KAAY programming. But it was the music of the mighty 1090 and its reach that made the radio station such an enduring international broadcasting legend. There was the eclectic Top 40 format, and at night, when the KAAY signal reached its peak strength, an early underground rock program called Beaker Street took over the air. Letters arrived in Little Rock bearing far-flung postmarks and exotic stamps requesting songs or posters or photographs or anything from bands like Frigid Pink, Savoy Brown, or Quicksilver Messenger Service. Rock groups decidedly not topping the charts in America, or any country for that matter. Dale Seidensorts, or Clyde Clifford, launched the Beaker Street program in 1966 from the KAAY transmitter site in Wrightsville in southern Pulaski County. And Beaker Street was the final program heard on the original KAAY 1090 AM on April 3rd, 1985. But while the KAAY call letters and frequency continued to live on with a religious-themed format, and Beaker Street was resuscitated twice for life at a couple of now-defunct Little Rock classic rock stations, there will never be another mighty 1090.
In the circle
game. And all good things must come to an end. For everyone who has been here at this station, to all of you who have shared our pleasures and our happinesses, thank you. From us, our best wishes, and goodbye. This is KAAY, Little Rock.
Here in its entirety is Brontosaurus by The Move, as heard on Clyde Clifford's Beaker Street on KAAY from June 28, 1970.
By the move. Clyde Clifford, Beaker Street and KAY. Good morning.
Brontosaurus by the move, as heard on Clyde Clifford's Beaker Street on the legendary KAAY Little Rock's 1090 on June 28, 1970. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. There are many rivers that run through or along Arkansas. The one that shares the state's name crosses over the heart of Arkansas and has been made famous in novels like True Grit. Charles Portis had his characters cross the Arkansas on the way out of Fort Smith and into what was called Indian Territory. On the state's east side, of course, is the mighty Mississippi, a river with champions like Mark Twain and hundreds of blues, folk, and country musicians. The White River begins in northwest Arkansas and winds through Missouri and the Arkansas Ozarks, past settlements like Calico Rock and St. James, and eventually rolls through the Arkansas Delta, well south of Clarendon. White may not have the literary or musical cachet of its neighbors, but Chris Engholm says it will someday.
It's going to. First of all, one thing I found in doing the research for this book was that the White River coming out of the Ozarks is our most pristine river in the country environmentally. They've done studies on North American rivers. The White River coming out of the Ozarks is, at this time, our most intact river. So it's a very important river just by that fact alone. Once it gets into the Delta, it's a threatened river, obviously. So that aspect, of the ecological aspect of the White River, I think is going to be something you're going to hear more about.
Chris Engholm made those comments last week during an opening reception for the exhibit White River Memoir, 700 miles of listening to the White River, at the Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. The exhibit, downstairs at the ACO, had people packed in to see photographs and video taken by Chris, but also other images painted and sketched by artists influenced by the river for more than 100 years.
Chris is a man devoted to the White River and the people living along its banks. But he's not one of them. He grew up in California, more than a half continent away from the river he's so passionate about now.
And I spent a lot of time in the High Sierra, especially the east side of the High Sierra, which doesn't look like Arkansas, but it has a lot of rivers and streams. So I was always been looking for a river like the White River, though, because the Owens River and a lot of the California rivers were suffered from overdevelopment and much before my time. And getting out here and finding a river that's still in a pretty pristine state was really a luxury.
Certainly the White River is a beloved and precious resource for many in North Arkansas. From the headwaters in our part of the Ozarks, the White meanders through Missouri and has become famous for the trout in the chilly water near Cotter in Baxter County. For generations, the South Flowing River along towns like Batesville, Newport, and Augusta has been a source of commerce, fishing, and at a time, swimming. But the people in the north tend not to know much about the river as it bends away toward the delta, and the people in the lower half of the state tend not to know much about the river's origins up here.
It passes through what I have seen as five different regions, and it's really interesting that the folks in the Ozarks don't know very much about the river as it passes through the delta and vice versa. So folks in the Ozarks don't have much awareness about the issues and the look and ecology of the river in the delta, and the same is true of the folks in the delta don't understand how the river really works and up in the Ozarks and some of the cultural issues here. But to navigate the entire river is just a wonderful thing because you get to know people here and then you start to compare issues and then you start putting people together. And tonight, you got people from Augusta, my friend Jim Fortune who followed me down the river, he's meeting people who are living in Fayetteville but they used to live in Searcy and Augusta and Des Arc. And it's just really neat to see the really what are two different cultures coming together here.
To get material for the exhibit at the Art Center of the Ozarks in downtown Springdale, Chris floated the length of the White. He took his cameras along, and some of the photographs are on the walls of the ACO. A video montage also plays with moving images captured from his canoe. But he also selected others' work to help tell the story of the river. A photograph from Don House is included, as are two paintings by Sharon Killian, as well as works by artists long since passed. Like its subject, the exhibit covers plenty of time and territory.
That's interesting, because someone said, you're really capturing the essence of the river in your photography, but it's totally impossible to capture the essence of the White River. It's too many rivers. It has a different complexion every time you're on it. And I think you're right. The best way to do it is to find people that have interpreted it their own way, and then you put them all in the same room. And it's just the experience of seeing everybody's attempt to capture the essence actually gives you the essence.
Some of the older photographs are stunning. A picture titled The River Rat was taken by Hugh Arthur Preller around 1915. In it, a young boy dressed in overalls stands in a boat, all at once looking like a boy from a century ago, but still possibly looking like a young man seen along the river just a decade or so ago. Chris Engholm found the photographer's granddaughter in Augusta, and the two became fast friends. Hugo Preller's wife, Gainey, became one of the first significant Arkansas female photographers. She performed many of the indoor portraits taken by the Prellers, including a shot of two young women from around 1925, included in the current exhibit. Another image is a colorful painting of life along the White 100 years ago, created by Preller. Chris Engholm says Preller's granddaughter had kept it all these years. To make sure the work could be included, it had to be brought back to life.
And it had faded and become just, it was extremely damaged to the point where it was almost like looking at a bunch of mud splattered on an old canvas. And it was barely salvageable. But we photographed it and I assembled these images into a kind of a stitched digital image and then used Photoshop and other programs to try to enhance it. But what was fun is that she remembered it as a kid. And she remembered the color scheme and how vibrant or not vibrant it was, and she was able to coach me to kind of bring it back how it actually looked. And it's a 1914 image of Augusta, but it shows summertime. People are swimming in the river, which people don't do anymore. It's cold now. There's a towboat, it's called, pushing a barge of timber, and there's a launch coming across Augusta over to what's called the Narrows, which isn't there anymore. The launch service, and there's an old famous wood mill in Augusta there in the water tower. So it, for me, that painting is one of the probably the best image of the art of the White River Delta from that period.
This exhibit is a visual one, but the collection subtitle and an accompanying book includes the phrase "Listening to the White River." Chris Engholm says a search for something to hear was his muse.
The inspiration of the book is some of these guys who are musicologists who came to this region a long time ago, Alan Lomax and his father, and they were called ballad hunters. And so when I built the canoe, I was reading some of the Ozark cultural histories, and ballad hunting or looking for old songs, dramatic tales, was an early tradition here. And so I called the named the canoe Ballad Hunter, and the first project was an oral history to go talk to people on the river and collect the stories, and it just quickly developed into much more of a multimedia kind of exhibition.
And even if the White River doesn't have nearly the musical attention as its cousin, the Mississippi, Chris Engholm says there are artistic nods.
There are songs written about it, and in fact I ran into one called Tears for the White River in Batesville, and I'm looking for the musicians. I heard the recording, it's a beautiful song. And these musicians are pretty reclusive, and I'm trying to make contact. So if they're hearing this, please give me a call, because we're going to put together a film eventually about the White River, and I want to compile a bunch of songs from the White River. And so some things exist, and then, of course, Jeff Nichols has a new film coming out next year called Mud, which is filmed in the White River. And, in fact, as I canoed down, I ran into the set at Crockett's Bluff.
The exhibit White River Memoirs will remain up at the Art Center of the Ozarks in downtown Springdale through the month. There is also a Facebook page for the exhibit. And there's a bit more from our visit with Chris Engholm online at ozarksatlarge.com that might be of interest to you if you've ever wondered what the White River looked like around here and further east before dams like Beaver and Bull Shoals were constructed, forever altering the flow of the White. That part of our conversation is an audio extra at our website.
The York Bowl in Fayetteville is kicking off its 2013 winter comedy season with a sold-out show featuring Ralphie May Thursday night. The comic was raised in Clarksville and gained attention on a national scale about a decade ago when he won second place on the reality television show competition Last Comic Standing. When we spoke on the phone yesterday, Ralphie told me he is not everyone's type of comedian. He says he's a little nutty and crazy, but he's got a lot of spirit and is really, really funny. Among the comic's earliest performances was an appearance at an open mic night at a Ramada Inn in Fayetteville. During yesterday's phone conversation, I asked Ralphie if he remembered the first joke he told at the local open mic night.
I don't, but I did kill. I crushed. I won a series of open mic battles, comedy contest, the comedy show. I destroyed. And eventually I got the K-Hog, the radio station up in Fayetteville, was sponsoring the Sam Kennison concert in town, and they wanted a local opener, and they had a comedy contest, and I won that too.
So was the winning kind of a inspiration for you to keep going with your comedy?
Yeah, and the fact that Sam said I was funny, and I mean, he was at the time, you know, one of the biggest guys in stand-up comedy, and he said that I was really, really funny, and so that I should move to Houston and pursue stand-up comedy like he did. And so that's what I did. I didn't even wait to graduate, you know. I just left Clarksville and moved to Houston as soon as possible.
It's worked out well for you, and on Thursday, you'll be...
Yeah, there was 14 years where it didn't seem like it worked out too well.
fair enough. But on Thursday, you'll be here in Fayetteville at the UARC Bowl, and the venue actually hosts its own set of open mic nights, and there's lots of locals who come in and participate in that. So as someone who came from those humble beginnings, do you have any suggestions or any advice for comics around here who are trying to start working on their comedy acts?
Just do as much as you can, as long as you can, and have a blast. It's really fun. If you're stressed about it, you're in the wrong thing. You know, it should be just natural and just having a great time. If it's funny, laugh at it. You know, make them laugh. It's the best drug in the world.
So in addition to being on stages doing live performances, you can also be seen on TV often. Last year you had a special on Comedy Central. It was your fourth,
yeah,
as I understand it, called Too Big to Ignore. Now, four seems like a lot to be doing, but I guess on the one hand it's a compliment because they keep asking you back, so you must be doing a good job. But is it stressful for you at all trying to come up with new material? Because I'm sure that's one of the things they say is don't do what you did in your last special.
Yeah, actually, it's not stressful at all for me. I write too fast. I was at a comedy club in Arlington, Texas last night for a special show. And there was the staff was like, you were just here in September and you did it a completely different 2 hours. No one's ever done that before. You know, I mean, it's I wrote 2 hours since September. You know, I write a ton of jokes, and I think they're going to love it. But just so everybody knows, I am an adult act. If you bring your kids, don't be creeped out by me, okay?
Fair
just
warning.
Just the money.
Yeah. Fair warning. Well, at the live shows, because you do have so much new material, do you ever run into fans who, you know, show up wanting to hear some of your old material because that's their favorite? I mean, how do you balance that at the live shows?
Well, what I do is I just tell them, hey, look, I don't do old material because you've already had it recorded. Now, because you're drunk right now, you might think it'd be awesome just to hear me do it live. But what's going to happen tomorrow, you're going to go, that fat guy ripped me off. You know, I mean, most of my fans, okay, aren't the richest people in the world, you know? And if you buy, you know, if they buy tickets to see me, you know, by all means, I'm going to give them a great show. A lot of them, it takes 2 hours or more to pay for the ticket. You know, that way we're even if I do 2 hours.
So really you're looking out for your fans that way.
Yeah, I'm looking out for them, you know. Comedy's not like music. Music, you want to hear the hits. The last thing you want to hear is the new stuff. But in comedy, if you know it's all coming, what makes you laugh is always writing the new stuff. And so I write more than probably most comedians, and I can't think of one that writes faster. But I'm a different type of guy. I mean, I've been doing it nearly 25 years. You know, I mean, I'm a little out there.
You mentioned being a little out there. In some of the interviews I've read, you have this quote about how great comedians aren't cut from silk. You know, their life is miserable. So do you feel in order to be a good comedian, you kind of have to have a miserable life so you have things to draw from?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. I really don't know if anything is very much easy. You know, life's tough on us all sometimes. You know, as a kid that I grew up dirt poor and stuff and ashamed and thought of as white trash and, you know, I only had one pair of shoes to last the whole year. I had two pairs of jeans and four shirts. That's it. And it was that's what you got. That's what you started school with. And, you know, I was a little... it's hard. It's a hard life, you know. Great comedians aren't cut from silk. We're cut from tater sacks. It's a hard, hard life.
Do you feel like it's
easy?
Do you feel like it's therapeutic to be able to kind of get up in front of people and poke fun of some of these things that were difficult about life?
You know, I think it's therapeutic for the audience to come and laugh. I think it's something that they don't get to do very often, you know. I haven't laughed at a sitcom, and I don't know how long, you know. I think Community made me laugh because my buddy is on it, my pal Ken Jeong, who was in The Hangover and stuff, you know, he's on it. And but I got to be honest with you, I need laughter. And I think that's what the stand-up comedy gives them. And I think there's a big movement in this country, you know, during hard times to move towards stand-up because, you know, people need to laugh.
So like you mentioned, you've been on the road for 25 years, nearly a quarter of a century. What are some of the most important things that maybe that you've learned being out on the road and performing in front of people?
That people are basically the same, you know. You know, no audience is dumb as what you think, and no audience is smart as what you think. They're pretty much the same. They just want to be laughed, you know. They want to laugh. They came to your show to hear you, you know, make me laugh, please, please. And they want you to succeed, you know. They want you to be great because they spent their time, money, and effort making it happen. And, you know, I can't fault anybody for any of that. That's a beautiful sentiment.
Well, you appear to be succeeding very well when you come through the area. You have a sold-out show in Fort Smith on Wednesday, a sold-out show in Fayetteville here. There are some tickets left to the show in Little Rock, so congratulations on all of that. What are you most looking forward to doing while you're back in Arkansas?
My niece just graduated from the University of Arkansas in December. She's graduating almost 2 years early. And my nephew has a house in Fayetteville that he's renovating. And so I'm going to hang out with him and just get low-key and drive around and go, oh, man, there used to be a Mr. Burger right here, you know. Oh, man, you know, that's what I'm going to do, you know. I'm just going to try and see some old friends and have some good laughs. And I want to see university and stuff. But, you know, that's it. I just want to, I'm a simple dude, man. You know, I'm not complicated at all, sugar.
Ralphie May will perform at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville Thursday night, but the show is sold out. There are still tickets available for his performance at the Robinson Center Music Hall in Little Rock for Friday night. More information is available at ralphiemay.com. For more information on comedians performing at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville this winter season, visit uarcbowl.com.
In Mali, the French military fights Islamist militants with airstrikes and awaits the arrival of an African force to help battle Al-Qaeda-linked rebels. And in Aleppo, Syrian government fighters and rebels trade fire, but neither side makes much progress. I'm Celeste Headlee. What's at stake in hotspots around the world? Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Window Washing, offering both residential and commercial cleaning services as well as power washing, gutter protection, and more. Information is available on the web at FayettevilleWindowWashing.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Cannon Creek.
Cannon Creek?
Cannon Creek.
Where's that?
Cannon Creek is just inside the Madison County border, almost Washington County. It's between the communities of Thompson and Crosses, just off of Highway 16.
Okay.
And the actual Cannon Creek flows into the White River.
Oh.
Kind of a White River show today.
Sure.
Because when you think Ralphie May grew up in Clarksville.
Mm-hmm. He grew up in Clarksville.
And that in Clarksville, that beautiful bridge goes right across the White River.
Right.
So, yeah.
Excellent.
Yes.
Busy weekend for you?
The one that just happened?
The one that just happened.
Not really.
No.
Somewhat calm.
Yeah. Movies, perhaps?
Did go see a couple of the, what are there, 10 movies nominated for Best Picture? Saw a couple of them.
I can't keep up.
Yeah, so I've seen three, plans to see three or four more. The goal is this year to see them all before the Academy Awards.
Do you ever make that goal?
I don't know if I ever have.
Because I've been around you enough to know that you try. I just haven't kept count if you've.
Right. No.
It's a lot of movies.
It is a lot of movies.
But you and Wayne Bell will be talking about those tomorrow.
Yes, because the Oscar nominations have been announced since Wayne and I last talked. So that's what we talk about tomorrow on the program.
I'm terrible about movies. I so wait till the last minute. You know what I saw this weekend? I saw The Dark Knight Rises, finally.
I have not seen that.
Have you not?
I don't think I will.
No?
No.
Okay.
I didn't like...
It's worth a watch.
Okay. I didn't like the second Batman movie that much.
Okay.
I thought Heath Ledger was great, but... really violent and really dark.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Happy Tuesday.